వక్రతుండ మహాకాయ సూర్యకోటి సమప్రభ నిర్విఘ్నం కురు మే దేవ సర్వకార్యషు సర్వదా. శివశక్త్యాయుక్తో యది భవతి శక్తః ప్రభవితుం నచే దేవం దేవో న ఖలు కుశలః స్పందితుమపి. అతస్త్వామారాధ్యా హరిహర విరించాదిభిరపి ప్రణంతుం స్తోతుం వా కతమకృత పుణ్యః ప్రభవతి.
Shri Sai Ram, my most loving and prayerful salutations at the divine lotus feet of our most beloved Bhagwan, Shri Satya Sai Baba. Dear listener, you are tuned to Radio Sai Global Harmony on Asia Stream, bringing you 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, the love and the message of Bhagwan, Shri Satya Sai Baba. Good morning, greetings and loving Sai Ram from Prashant Hindalem. And with me, Team Radio Sai, Sunil, welcoming you to this morning segment, Divine Glory on Thursday Live from Prashantinilayam. Today is the 17th of October, 2019, and let me first read out to you today's Sai Inspires message. What is the difference in the process of acquiring spiritual wisdom and that of acquiring worldly knowledge? Bhagwan lovingly explains to us today, and I quote, "Study of scriptures can reinforce the spiritual urges already in you and induce you to practice the precepts. Don't treat the learning you derive from them as so much fodder for the brain. It must be sublimated into bliss or ananda for the individual. Envy, pompousness, egotism, such evil traits have to be driven out of the individual. The source for wisdom is the guru, the soul or the purusha latent in you. This spiritual treasure can be obtained from others too. However, the giver has to possess supreme attainment and the recipient has to possess the special merit that deserves the achievement. The seed may have life in it, but the soil must be plowed and made fit to activate it. When both conditions are satisfied, the harvest of spiritual success is assured. Remember, the real guru steals your heart, not your wealth." Unquote. This was taken from Satya Sai Vahini, Chapter 13. Dear listener, the time right now in our studios is 43 minutes past 9 a.m., that is Indian Standard Time. And today in Divine Glory, I have lined up for you readings from the English version of the holy book Sri Sai Satcharitra, written by Sri Hemant Pant, followed by a conversation with Mrs. Prema Bose. And in conversation with her is Sister Karuna Munshi. First, readings from Sri Sai Satcharitra. Sri Sai Satcharitra is an account on the life and teachings of Sai Baba of Shirdi, written by Sri Hemant Pant. We are thankful to Vasanthi Sundaram for reading out the contents from this holy book and to Veeramani Kannan for the melodious musical support. Wishing you all a holy and blessed Thursday and a wonderful day ahead. And here it is for your listening pleasure.
Now, we come to our main story. Mr. Sate. There was a gentleman named Mr. Sate, who had attained some publicity many years ago during Crawford regime, which was put down by Lord Rye, the governor of Mumbai. He suffered severe losses in trade. Other adverse circumstances gave him much trouble and made him sad and dejected. Being restless, he thought of leaving home and going out to a distant place. Man does not generally think of God, but when difficulties and calamities overtake him, he turns to him and prays for relief. If his demerits have come to an end, God arranges his meeting with a saint who gives him proper directions regarding his welfare. Mr. Sate had similar experience. His friends advised him to go to Shirdi, where so many people were flocking to get Sai Baba's darshan for peace of mind and the satisfaction of their wants. He liked the idea and at once came to Shirdi in 1917. Seeing Baba's form, which was like eternal Brahma, self-luminous, peerless and pure, his mind lost its restlessness and became calm and composed. He thought it was the accumulation of merits in his former births that brought him to the holy feet of Baba. He was a man of strong will. He at once started making a parayan of Guru Charitra. When the reading was finished in the Sapta or 7 days, Baba gave him a vision that night. It was to this effect. Baba, with Guru Charitra in his hand, was explaining its contents to Mr. Sate, who was sitting in front and listening carefully. When he woke up, he remembered the dream and felt very happy. He thought it was extremely kind of Baba who awakens souls like his that are snoring in ignorance and makes them taste the nectar of Guru Charitra. Next day, he informed Kaka Sahib Dikshit of this vision and requested him to consult Sai Baba regarding its meaning or significance, whether one Saptah reading was sufficient or whether he should begin again. Kaka Sahib Dikshit, when he got a suitable opportunity, asked Baba, "Deva, what did you suggest to Mr. Sate by this vision? Whether he should stop or continue the Saptah?" "He is a simple devotee. His desire should be fulfilled." Then Baba replied, "He should make one more Saptah of the book. If the work be studied carefully, the devotee will become pure and will be benefited. The Lord will be pleased and will rescue him from the bondage of the mundane existence." At this time, Hemat Pant was present there. He was shampooing Baba's legs. When he heard Baba's word, he thought in his mind, "What? Mr. Sate read for a week only and got a reward, and I am reading it for 40 years with no result? His 7 days stay here becomes fruitful, while my 7 years stay goes for nothing? Like a chatak bird, I am ever waiting for the merciful cloud to pour its nectar on me and bless me with his instruction." No sooner did this thought cross his mind, Baba knew it then and there. It was the experience of the bhaktas that Baba understood all their thoughts and that he suppressed the evil thoughts and encouraged the good ones. Reading Hemat Pant's mind, Baba at once asked him to get up, go to Shama and get from him 15 rupees as dakshina, sit and chit-chat with him for a while and then return. Mercy dawned in Baba's mind and so he issued this order. And who could disobey Baba's order? Hemat Pant immediately left the masjid and came to Shama's house. He had just bathed and was wearing a dhotar. He came out and asked Hemat Pant, "How is it that you are here now? It seems you have come from the masjid. Why do you look so restless and dejected? Why are you alone? Please sit and rest, while I shall do my worship and return. In the meanwhile, you please take Pan Bida and let us have a pleasant chat." After saying this, he went inside and Hemat Pant sat alone in the veranda. He saw in the window a well-known Marathi book named Nath Bhagwat. This is a commentary by the saint Eknath on the 11th skanda of the bigger Sanskrit work, the Bhagwat. At the suggestion or recommendation of Sai Baba, Messrs. Babu Sahib Jog and Kaka Sahib Dixit read Bhagavad Gita daily with its Marathi commentary named Bhavartha Deepika or Dhyaneshwari. This is a dialogue between Krishna and his friend devotee Arjun. And Nath Bhagavat, which is a dialogue between Krishna and his servant devotee Uddhav, and also Eknath's other big work, Bhavartha Ramayana. When devotees came to Baba and asked him certain questions, he sometimes answered them in part and asked them to go and listen to the readings of the above-mentioned works, which are the main treatises of Bhagavad Dharma. When the devotees went and listened, they got full and satisfactory replies to their questions. Hemant Pant also used to daily read some portions of Nath Bhagavat. That day, he did not complete the daily portion of his reading, but had left it unfinished in order to accompany certain devotees who were going to the masjid. When he took up the book from Shama's window and casually opened it, he found to his surprise that the unfinished portion opened up. He thought Baba had sent him very kindly to Shama's house for helping him to complete his daily reading. So he went through the unfinished portion and completed it. As soon as this was over, Shama, after doing his worship, came out and the following conversation took place between them. Hemant Pant, I have come with a message from Baba. He has asked me to return with 15 rupees as dakshina from you and to sit with you for a while and have a pleasant chit-chat and then return to the masjid with you. Shama asks with surprise, I have no money to give. Take my 15 namaskars instead of the rupees as dakshina for Baba. Hemant Pant, all right, your namaskars are accepted. Now, let us have some chit-chat. Tell me some stories and leelas of Baba which will destroy our sins. Shama, sit here for a while. Wonderful is the sport of this god. You know it already. I am a village rustic, while you are an enlightened citizen. You have seen some more leelas since your coming over here. How should I describe them before you? Well, take these leaves, betel nut and chuna, and have the panbida, while I go in, dress myself and come out. In a few minutes, Shama came out and sat talking with Hemant Pant. He said, the leelas of this Baba is inscrutable. There is no end to his leelas. Who can see them? He plays or sports with his leelas. Still, he is beyond them. What do we rustics know? Why does not Baba himself tell us these stories? Why does he send learned men like you to fools like me? His ways are inconceivable. I can only say they are not human. With this preface, Shama added, I now remember a story which I shall relate to you. I know it personally. As a devotee is resolute and determined, so is Baba's immediate response. Sometimes Baba puts the devotees to severe test and then gives them Upadesh. As soon as Hemant Pant heard the word Upadesh, as if a flash of lightning crossed through his mind, he at once remembered the story of Mr. Sate's Guru Charitra reading and thought Baba might have sent him to Shama in order to give peace to his restless mind. However, he curbed this feeling and began to listen to Shama's stories. They all showed how kind and affectionate Baba was to his devotees. Hemant Pant began to feel joy on hearing all of these. Then Shama began to tell the following story. Mrs. Radhabai Deshmukh. There was an old woman by name Radhabai. She was a mother of one Kashyap Deshmukh. Hearing Baba's fame, she came to Shirdi with the people of Sangamnir. She took Baba's darshan and was much satisfied. She loved Baba intimately and resolved in her mind that she should accept Baba as her guru and take some updesh from him. She decided to fast herself unto death so long as Baba did not accept her and give her any updesh or mantra. She stayed in her lodging and stopped taking any food or water for 3 days. I was frightened by these ordeal of this old woman and interceded with Baba on her behalf. I said, Deva, what is this you have started? You draw so many persons here. You know this old lady. She is very obstinate and depends on you. She has resolved to fast unto death And if you don't accept an instructor, if anything worse happens, people will blame you and say that Baba did not instruct her. And in its consequence, she met her death. That's what people will say. So take some mercy on her, bless her and instruct her. On seeing her determination, Baba sent for her and made her change her mind by addressing as follows. Oh mother, why do you have to subject yourself to unnecessary tortures? You are my mother and I am your child. Take pity on me and hear me through. I tell you my own story, which if you listen carefully will do you good. I had a guru. He was a great saint and most merciful. I served him long, very long. Still, he would not blow any mantra into my ears. I had keen desire never to leave him, but to stay with him and serve him, and at all costs receive some instructions from him. But he had his own way. He first got my head shaved and asked me for 2 paise as dakshina. I gave the same at once. You may say that as my guru was perfect, why should he ask me for money and how should he be called desireless? The reply is that he never cared for coins. What had he to do with them? His 2 paise were firm, faith and patience. I gave these 2 paise to him and he was very pleased. I resorted to my guru for 12 years. He brought me up. There was no dearth of food and clothing. He was full of love and he was love incarnate. How was I to describe it? He loved me most. Rare is a guru like him. When I looked at him, he seemed as if he was in deep meditation. And then, we both were filled with bliss. Night and day I gazed at him with no thought of hunger and thirst. Without him, I felt restless. I had no other subject to meditate, nor any other thing than my guru to attend. He was my sole refuge. My mind was always fixed on him. This nishtha or firm faith is 1 paise of dakshina. Saburi, which is patience, is the other paise. I waited patiently and served my guru. This saburi will ferry you across the sea of this mundane existence. Saburi removes all sins and afflictions, gets rid of calamities in various ways, and casts aside all fear and ultimately gives you success. Saburi is a mine of virtues, consort of good thought. My guru never expected any other thing from me. He never neglected me, but protected me at all times. I lived with him and was sometimes away from him. Still, I never felt the absence of his love. He always protected me by his glance, just as a tortoise feeds her young ones, whether they are near her or away from on the other side of the bank, with her loving glances. Oh mother, my guru never taught me any mantra. Then how shall I blow any mantra into your ears? Just remember that guru's tortoise-like loving glance gives us happiness. Do not try to get mantra or updesh from anybody. Make me the sole object of your thoughts and actions, and you will no doubt attain paramartha. Look at me wholeheartedly, and I in turn will look at you. Sitting in this masjid, I speak the truth, nothing but the truth. No sadhana or proficiency in the 6 shastras is necessary. Have faith and confidence in your guru. Believe that the guru is the sole actor or doer. Blessed is he who knows the greatness of his guru and thinks himself to be Hari, Hara and Brahma incarnate. Instructed in this way, the old lady was convinced. She bowed to Baba and gave up her fast. Hearing this story carefully and attentively and marking its significance and appropriateness, Hemat Pant was most agreeably surprised. On seeing this wonderful leela of Baba, he was moved from top to toe. He was overflowing with joy, his throat was choked, and he was not able to utter a single word. Shama, on seeing him in this condition, asked him, "What is the matter with you? Why are you silent?" How innumerable leelas of Baba shall I describe? Just at this time, the bell in the masjid began to ring, proclaiming that the noon worship and arati ceremony had begun. Therefore, Shama and Hemat Pant hurried to the masjid. Bapu Sahib Jog had just started the worship. Women were up in the masjid and men were standing below in the open courtyard, and they were all singing the aarti in chorus to the accompaniment of drums. Shama went up, pulling Hemad Pant with him. He sat to the right and Hemad Pant in front of Baba. On seeing them, Baba asked Hemad Pant to give the dakshina brought from Shama. He replied that Shama gave namaskars instead of rupees and that he was there in person. Baba said, "All right. Now let me know whether you both had a chit-chat, and if so, tell me all that you talked about." Not minding the sounds of the bell, the drum and the chorus songs, Hemad Pant was eager to tell what they had talked and started to narrate it. Baba was also anxious to hear, and so he left the bolster and leaned forward. Hemad Pant said all that they talked about was very pleasant, especially the story of the old lady was the most wonderful, and that on hearing it, he thought that his leela was inexplicable, and under the guise of that story, he really blessed him. Baba then said, "Wonderful is that story. How were you blessed? I would like to know everything in detail from you, so tell me all about it." Then Hemad Pant related in full the story which he had heard a little while before and which had made a lasting impression on his mind. Hearing this, Baba was much pleased and asked him, "Did the story strike you and did you catch its significance?" Hemad Pant replied, "Yes, Baba. The restlessness of my mind has vanished and I have got true peace and rest and come to know the true path." Then Baba spoke as follows, "My method is quite unique. Remember well, this is one story and it will be very useful. To get the knowledge of the self, dhyan is necessary. If you practice it continuously, the vrittis or subtle thoughts will be pacified. Being quite desireless, you should meditate on God, who is in all the creatures, and when the mind is concentrated, the goal will be achieved. Meditate always on my formless nature, which is knowledge incarnate, consciousness and bliss. If you cannot do this, meditate on my form from top to toe, as you see here, night and day. As you go on doing this, your vrittis will be single-pointed, and the distinction between the dhyata, meditator, dhyana, act of meditation, and dhyaya, object meditated upon, will be lost, and the meditator will be one with the consciousness and be merged in the Brahma. The mother or the tortoise is on one bank of the river and her young ones are on the other. She gives neither milk nor warmth to them. Her mere loving glance gives them nutrition. The young ones do nothing but remember or meditate upon their mother. The tortoise glance is to the young ones the only source of sustenance and happiness. Similar is the relation between the guru and the disciples." When Baba uttered these words, the chorus of the aarti songs was over and all cried out loudly in unison, "Victory be to our Sadguru Sai Maharaj, who is pure consciousness, knowledge and bliss." Dear readers, let us imagine that we are at this time standing amongst the crowd in the masjid, and let us join them in this Jai Jaikar. After this aarti ceremony was over, prasad was distributed. Bapu Sahib Joe came forward as usual and after saluting Baba, gave into his palm a handful of sugar candy. Baba pushed all this into the hands of Hemad Pant and said to him, "If you take this story to heart and remember it well, your state will be sweet as a sugar candy. All your desires will be fulfilled and you will be happy." Hemad Pant bowed down to Baba and implored, "Do favor me like this. Bless and protect me always." Baba replied, "Hear the story, meditate on it and assimilate its spirit. Then you will always remember and meditate on the Lord who will manifest himself to you." Dear readers, Hemad Pant got prasad of sugar candy and we now get the prasad of sugar candy of this story. Let us drink it to our heart's content, meditate on it and assimilate it and be strong and happy by Baba's grace. Towards the end of the 19th chapter, Hemad Pant had dealt with some other matters which are given below. Baba's advice regarding our behavior. The following words of Baba are of general welfare and invaluable. If they are kept in mind and acted upon, they will always do you good. Baba said, unless there is some relationship or connection, nobody goes anywhere. If any man or creatures come to you, do not drive them away, but receive them well and treat them with due respect. Sri Hari will be certainly pleased if you give water to the thirsty, bread to the hungry, clothes to the naked, and your veranda to strangers for resting. If anybody wants any money from you and you are not inclined to give, do not give, but do not bark at him like a dog. Let anybody speak hundreds of things against you, do not resent by giving any bitter reply. If you tolerate such things, you will certainly be happy. Let the world go topsy-turvy. You remain where you are. Standing in your place, look on calmly at the show of all things passing before you. Demolish the wall of difference that separates you from me, and then the road for our meeting will be clear and open. The sense of differentiation as I and thou is the barrier that keeps away the disciple from his master. And unless that is destroyed, the state of union is not possible. Allah Malik, God is the sole proprietor, nobody else is the protector. His method of work is extraordinary, invaluable and inscrutable. His will be done, and He will show us the way and satisfy our heart's desires. It is on account of Rinanubandh, former relationship, that we have come together. Let us love and serve each other and be happy. He who attains the supreme goal of life is immortal and happy. All others merely exist and live as long as they breathe. Encouraging good thoughts to fruition. It is interesting to note how Sai Baba encouraged good thoughts. You have to surrender yourself completely to him with love and devotion, and then you will see how he helps you throughout. Some saint has said that when you get a good thought immediately after awakening from sleep, and if you develop the same afterwards during the day, your intellect will be unfolded and your mind will attain calmness. Hemant Pant wanted to try this. On one Wednesday night before going to bed, he thought, tomorrow is Thursday, an auspicious day, and the place Shirdi is so holy. So let me pass the whole day in remembering and celebrating the Ram Naam. And then he slept off. Next morning when he got up, he remembered without any effort the name of Ram and was much pleased. He then, after finishing his morning duties, went to see Baba with flowers. When he left Dixitwada and was passing by Butiwada, he heard a beautiful song that was sung in front of Baba. The song was Guru Kripanjan Payo Mere Bhai by Eknath, in which he says that he got collyrium in the form of his Guru's grace, which opened his vision and made him see Ram in and out, in sleep, dream and waking state and everywhere. There were so many songs, but why was this song particularly chosen? Is this not a curious coincidence arranged by Baba to amplify the determination of Hemant Pant to sing unceasingly Ram Naam during the day? All saints agree and lay stress upon the efficacy of uttering Ram's name in fulfilling the ambitions of the Bhaktas and in protecting and saving them from all calamities. Variety in Updesh, slanderer condemned. Sai Baba required no special place nor any special time for giving instructions. Whenever an occasion demanded, he gave them freely. Once it so happened that a bhakta of Baba reviled someone behind his back before other people. On leaving aside merits, he dwelt on the faults of his brother and spoke sarcastically that the hearers were disgusted. Generally, we see people have a tendency to scandalize others unnecessarily, and this brings on ill feelings. Saints see scandal in another light. They say there are various ways of cleansing or removing dirt by means of water and soap, but a scandal monger has got a way of his own. He removes the dirt of others by his tongue. So in a way, he obliges the person whom he reviles, and for this he is to be thanked. Sai Baba had his own method of correcting the scandalmonger. He knew by his omniscience what the slanderer had done, and when he met him at noon near the Lendi, Baba pointed out to him a pig that was eating filth near the fence and said to him, behold, How with what relish it is gulping filth. Your conduct is similar. You go on reviling your own brother to your heart's content. After performing many deeds of merit, you are born as a human. And if you act like this, how can Shirdi help you in any way? Needless to say, the Bhakta took the lesson to his heart and went away. In this way, Baba went on giving instructions wherever necessary. If these are born in our minds and acted upon, their spiritual goal is not far off. There is a proverb which says, "If there be my Hari, he will feed me on my cot." This proverb is only true in respect of food and clothing. But if anyone believing this sits idle and does nothing in spiritual matters, he will be ruined. One has to exert himself to his utmost for attaining self-realization. The more he endeavors, the better for him.
साई गुरुवर की परमानंद सदा
to Sight.
Spend the day with Sight.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m.
on Radio Sai's Thursday Live.
Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Stay tuned.
Sairam, dear listeners, at Radio Sai, we are very pleased to bring you a special conversation with an exceptionally long-time devotee of Bhagwan Baba, Mrs. Prema Bose. Mrs. Bose comes from an illustrious family. Her father, late Sri R.P. Sarathy, was the first additional defense secretary of the newly independent India. And along with her mother, Mrs. Kamala Sarathy, and her older sister Leela, Mrs. Prema Bose grew up in the country's national capital, New Delhi. Many of our listeners are familiar with the name of her mother, Mrs. Kamala Sarathy. During the early years, Mrs. Sarathy was instrumental in bringing many devotees to the lotus feet of Bhagwan Baba, including Mrs. Rani Subramanyam of our very popular Rani Ma series. Coming back to Mrs. Prema Bose, after completing her schooling in New Delhi, she went on to earn her BSc honors in nursing from the Delhi University. She then taught nursing at her alma mater for 4 years, before earning herself a scholarship to pursue her master's in nursing at New York's prestigious Columbia University. Even after her marriage, she continued to work in the nursing-related field for 5 years in the United States. Later on, she chose to be a stay-at-home mom and devote herself to raising her 2 children in the United States. Subsequently, in 1981, she took over the family's textile import business in Philadelphia, USA, and ran it successfully till she sold it in the summer of 2010. A bright student, teacher, entrepreneur, mom, and now grandma, Mrs. Bose is happy to have hung her shoes and enjoy her retirement in Philadelphia, Chennai, and her favorite place in the whole wide world, Prashanti Nilayam. At the time of the recently concluded 85th birthday celebrations, Mrs. Bose has spent 62 and a half years in Sai proximity. Sairam, Mrs. Bose, and a very warm welcome to Radio Sai.
Thank you, Sairam. I am honored that you asked me to do this.
And we are delighted to have you. Let me start off by telling you what an honor it is to sit across from someone who has known Bhagwan for over 6 decades. Now let's start at the beginning. In 1948, you were a 12-year-old living in Luton's New Delhi in your father's official residence along one of those tree-lined streets. You were attending middle school, taking music lessons, happy in your little world. Your dad was a bureaucrat with the central government and your mom a stay-at-home music-loving violinist. Your only other sibling was your older sister Leela. Free India was barely a year old, and modes of communication were few and far between. Now, how on earth did a 21-year-old wonder boy, calling himself Sai Baba in the distant south, enter this picture?
That is really an amazing thing, how it happened, because we as a family did not necessarily go with holy men, we did not run after holy men. We did not have a spiritual basis in our life. But this was really, we in Delhi, we had this huge residence, and in the annex were many, many rooms. So our music master, he was a classical Carnatic singer, a very good classical Carnatic singer, Mr. B.V. Lakshmanan. He was living in the annex. Mm-hmm. And one day a postcard came for him from his sister. And my sister collected the mail from the postman and she brought it in. And as she was bringing it in, she read the postcard. And in the postcard it said, his sister had written that Swami has asked us to come and see him this summer.
And
Swami,
where was the sister located, if I may?
She was in Madras.
I see.
And so she said, this summer, so you must come and we must all go to Puttaparthi. So my sister showed this to my mother, very intrigued, you know, who is this? Sai Baba who's inviting. So first my mother thoroughly scolded her for reading other people's mail And then she herself was intrigued. So that evening when Mr. B.V. Lakshman, we called him B.V., when B.V. came, we asked him, we all bombarded him with questions about who is this, what is this. So he told us about Swami and Puttaparthi and how they had seen him in Venkatagiri's house. They had sung for him and he'd invited them to go to Puttaparthi, and it's a little village. And it turns out that we were going to Madras on a holiday that summer. So my mother decided that maybe we should also go and see this Swami in Puttaparthi that we knew nothing about.
Just like that.
Just like that. I mean, on the spur of the moment. And this is not something that we did. So definitely, this was a call from Swami. You know, it's amazing because it was not something of, it was a volition of ours. It just happened. So we were then decided that we would go and see Swami that summer.
And other than intrigue and curiosity, you had no other inclination really at that time?
No, none at all. My mother had, you know, I'm sure she has latent spirituality in her, which needed to be awakened. And also she had three loves, her latent spirituality, her love of music, and her love of her two children. So these are things that Swami eventually addressed.
I see. So what was your first journey to Puttaparthi like in the summer of 1948?
It was amazing. Here we are coming from Delhi, which we had a big house, garden, your bedroom, bathrooms, everything. We went to Madras first. Then we told our family that we were thinking of going to Puttaparthi with B.V., his brother Rama, his twin brother, and his sister and her two daughters. And a couple of my aunts were also intrigued. So they decided they would come with us with their two children, you know. And so the party grew, and finally we were like 15 or 16 people, old, middle-aged, youngsters. So we all went by train to Penugunda. And that in itself, I believe, was like a overnight or longer journey. Then we got down and we had to walk to the bus station, which is a little bit distance. We got coolies to carry the luggage. Of course, before that, I have to mention that Revati, the sister of B.V., had told us that we needed all the provisions that we needed to bring. She told us there won't be anything there, so bring all the rice and dal, everything you need, plus your cooking vessels. So we had big trunks of all of that also. So when we arrived,
going on a safari.
Going on a safari, chanting, whatever.
Spiritual safari, okay.
We had no idea what was going at the other end. So then we, in Bukkapatnam, this ratty bus came along, rattling along, and he put all our luggage in, and we traveled to from Penugunda to Bukkapatnam. And in Bukkapatnam, we had to get down, and we had to get bullock carts to take us to Puttaparthi. And of course, by now it was pretty late at night because the buses are always late. And so we almost every time we went there, we had to go into the village, wake them up, they tie the bullocks to the bullock carts and bring it. And sometimes we had so much luggage that only the luggage went in the bullock carts and we all walked.
Wow.
We walked and we crossed the Chitravati and came to Puttaparthi.
Quite a trek.
It was quite a trek, but somehow we didn't seem to mind it at all.
And what was the reaction of the local villages when you woke them to carry your stuff coming from distant Madras?
I mean, they would do it because they earn money. But there was definitely around them, in some of them, there was an air of hostility. You know, and the thing, oh, you're going to Puttaparthi and, you know, he's nothing, you know, you're going to see him. So, you know, we'd get all these comments. Why are you coming to see and things like that? But basically, one thing good was, except for my mother, who spoke Telugu, and B.V. and his family, the rest of us didn't speak Telugu. So we didn't understand what they said. So we were quite happy.
Your ignorance was bliss.
Yes. Totally. So that first trip, by the time we arrived at the ashram, it was quite late at night. It was dark. And as we were coming, Revati told us, look, look, you can see that light in the distance. And so we looked and there was this powerful light in the distance.
Like a flashlight?
Yeah, it was Swami. He used to carry a big flashlight always with him because we had no electricity. So he had this big long flashlight and a powerful beam. So he was flashing to see if, you know, that our approach. And he was there at the gate to greet us.
Oh my God.
It was wonderful. It was dark. We really couldn't see too much. That was our first intro to Swami. And then he showed us where to put our luggage and where we should be sleeping that night. And that was our first trip. to Puttaparthi.
So you were welcomed straight by the source.
Yes.
Oh my God. And what was, when you woke up and you started your introduction to Puttaparthi, what was your first impression of Swami?
It's interesting. I don't know if there's a first impression, but the general impression that you get, because I mean, I was 12 years, I don't necessarily remember my first impression.
Right.
But the general impression of Swami was that he was, I still remember, the thing I remember is his eyes. They have not changed. His brilliance, his look, that when he looks at you, it looks right through you. It looks at your soul. That is Swami, and he's there. But our thing, main thing that we all felt was his love and concern for us. That he would come, and he was very active. He'd come in and out, and he'd be through and tell us, you know, ask us different things. So that was basically, you know, and it grew as we kept coming.
What did he look like physically? He was 21.
Yeah, he was very slim. And he had this head of hair. And he'd wore kapnis of, he wore this dhoti kapni. But he'd wear different colors. He'd wear pink, he'd wear orange, yellow, all different colors. And, you know, in fact, we, when we were there, we used to consider it quite an honor to be asked to wash his kapni and do all of that for him. But that, and then he was, he would talk very fast. He talked in Telugu. And my mother would need to translate to us the first trip. Subsequently, he began to talk more in Tamil a little bit for us. But the first trip, mostly in Telugu. And he would tell her and then he would translate to us.
And what was Puttaparthi like those days and life here? I know it's changed huge leaps and bounds ever since. But in 1948, Puttaparthi, 1 year after India's independence, what was the village like?
It was truly a backward, one of the most backward rural villages. Because, you know, after that I went to Delhi villages, Najafgarh and all. Even they were a little more forward. But Puttaparthi was really down a backward village. There were only a, Swami's compound had a wall around it. And there was his mandir and the buildings attached to it. There was a... the bhajan hall, there was a small annex room, then a big shed, a covered veranda outside. Then inside was a huge courtyard. And on one side of the courtyard were the Swami's rooms, his where he stayed and his bathing room. And on the other side were the places where we cooked. They had with, we had to cook with firewood, which we didn't even know. We had smoke coming out of our eyes cooking, but firewood. And in the middle of the quadrangle was a well. Where in the morning we would like brush our teeth and things like that. But Puttaparthi itself was, I mean, the, what we call this Chitravati Road and this main road was like paths where carts went and it was just beaten down paths.
And who would have imagined that planes would be landing here and...
Exactly. And that's what I was telling my mother, because when the planes came, her, one of her final journeys into Puttaparthi was by plane. So I said, can you imagine... that we came by bullock cart and now we're coming by
flying
plane.
Into
really
Puttaparthi.
Totally amazing.
It is.
Yeah.
And life for devotees must have been very grueling.
Well, I suppose so, but we didn't think so because I guess we just love being with Swami. But what morning it was like the whole routine. We had to, there were no bathrooms, so we had to go to the mountains. I mean, where the administration block is now was our big mountain with all the rocks. And I'd contend with the pigs and the goats and the thorns.
Because it
and
gave
all
you some
it.
Privacy.
Yeah. Maybe we'd go in a group of two or three, so one would be watch out and we look out. Then we had to go to the Chitravati River to bathe and change and wash our clothes.
I see.
Which is all quite an experience. Then we'd come back. And, but then, and then my, in the meantime, you know, my mother and all would have cooked lunch. Lunch was ready, you know. And then about 11 o'clock, 11:30, Swami would gather us alone in the bhajan hall. And he would sit in the middle with men and women on either side. And he would sing. He would teach us bhajans. Also, I forgot to mention, from Delhi, my mother's violin master had come with us. So he used to play the violin. B.V. and Ramu used to sing. My sister was a very good singer. My mother too could sing. So he would sit and he would teach not only bhajans, but also they would sing Tyagaraja Kirtanams. And Swami would sing with them. He loved Tyagaraja, as he still does.
He still does,
He still does. So he would, and some quite often he would correct them. you know, would say, no, Tyagaraja meant these words, not that.
Mm-hmm.
So he would correct them in the correct way. So those were like, it would sometimes be 1 hour, sometimes 1.5 hours.
Wow.
And Swami would sing with us, teach us, tell us how to pronounce the words, say things. And then at the end of it, we would have arati. Bhavana Purusha was our arati those days. And then we would stop for lunch.
Mm-hmm. Now, you were city-bred girls living this primitive life in Puttaparthi. There must have been a very compelling energy that drew you here. So please do share with our listeners some of the interactions you had with Bhagwan when access was so easy. And especially if you can share some of the highlights of the evening sessions that old-time devotees had on the banks of the river Chitravati.
Well, yeah, that's right. We came from Delhi to this rural area where somehow we didn't feel anything because Swami was constantly in and out of our lives. While we were in the outside, he'd come and he'd sit on our trunks because we had no chairs or anything. And most of the sitting we'd do on the floor. So when he came, we'd quickly put a cloth on the trunk and he'd sit on the trunk and he would talk to my mother and all the elders and, you know, all of us. Yeah, I guess he'd ask them about their life in Delhi. He'd give them advice as to what to do. Also, he would be, you know, like, all the in and outs that Swami did were like little lessons, mini lessons of life. Like I remember this one incident when my mother was making chapatis for us. And that day the chapatis didn't come out too well. And she was saying, oh, never mind, it's only for us, so it's okay, let it be like this. And that day Swami came and said, you know, people from Delhi make very good chapatis, so I would like to eat one of your chapatis. So basically, I mean, you look at it as a life lesson that whatever you do, you have to do it well or think, I'm doing it for Swami, so you have to do it properly. So whatever you do, you take it that you're doing it for Swami. So these are little life lessons that he used to tell us. Also, my aunt Sarju, that is Rani Ma's sister, they all came on the second visit with us, with little children. So we used to take all the laundry and go to the Chitravati River to do the laundry. At that time, he'd moved into Prashanti. And as we were walking by the street, he would be in the window and he'd call us. And he'd say, oh, come, you know. And then we'd go, we just take our clothes, just drop everything. We'd go there
laundry
and he'd sit
can
and
wait.
Talk. Laundry can wait.
God beckons.
So he would talk to us. And in some ways, he was almost like a child. You know, he was so childlike. And with the children, he would play with them. He would play, different games with them. He would dress the little girls, you know, who were 3 and 4 with flowers and all. Oh, that reminds me. He also taught us. We from Delhi knew nothing about making garlands.
I see.
So he sat and he taught us how to make the garlands with jasmine.
Oh,
with
how to tie the knots and do it.
Yeah, with that, the raw material, not with string, uh-huh. Not with needle and thread, but with the other raw material. He sat and he taught us how to do all that. Also, one time he said, there were different devotees there who wanted to do some puja, Pada Puja. So he asked my mother, do you know how to do Pada Puja? And she said, no, Swami, we don't do any pujas, we don't know anything. He said, okay, you come. My sister and she, and all of us went. He said, you come tomorrow morning and you do Pada Puja. So we went and he had bought all the things necessary for the Pada Puja. He'd bought the flowers, the kumkum, the haldi, everything, the cloth. And he directed one piece by piece. He directed my mother how to do the Pada Puja. Yeah. Now you do this, everything. He was so sweet and patient. But he would give us directions on lots of things. And, you know, those days. And as you said, by the evening, after lunch, after tea, he would take us to the Chitravati River. We would all walk down behind Swami. And the adults he would talk to. But before that, because we were all, 12 and less.
Yes.
So we would be playing. And so he would tell us, oh, you people make a lot of galata. So he said, okay. And he'd dip his hands into the sand and bring out hot, sweets and other things and give it to all of us and say, okay, now you be quiet. Don't do any more galata. You keep quiet while I talk to the others. I mean, for me as a child, that's my memory of Chitravati. We used to go and we used to play in the sand happily till the evening, till he finished talking to the adults, and then we'd, you know, come home.
And these hot sweets Swami pulled out from the sand, weren't they gritty?
No, not at all. Mysore Pak and halwa, laddus, all of that he used to pull out, and no, there was no sand.
As you mentioned, you came from an intellectual family with an analytical bent of mind. Your family was not given to ritualistic practices, as your mother knew nothing about Pada Puja. And here was this young spiritual master going through a stage in his own journey that was replete with miracles and manifestations. How did the twain meet? How did your family get drawn to Sai?
It's just that it did not impress us, because, you know, that is different. What we, I guess, were looking for was something more spiritual. But the thing is that he did show us in our life quite a few what you could call miracles, which at that time it was not miracles like turning something into or taking manifesting something. It was miracles in daily life. The very first visit that we went to Swami, we had planned to stay like 2 weeks. So Swami said, no, stay longer. You know, stay another week or 10 days. And we said, okay. We were very happy there. So we said, okay. And we stayed. But we had already booked our tickets back to Delhi from Madras. So we stayed the extra 10 days, and we came to Madras like on the morning of the day we had to leave. So then we rushed to the train station, and there we see the Grand Trunk Express going out, the last carriage out of the platform, and there we were on the platform.
Missed
the train. So my mother was very worried, because those days, you know, if you had a ticket, very difficult to change and all of that. She said, let me go and check with the station master what we can do. So she went to the station master, and he looked at it and he said, madam, there is no date on your ticket. You can go any day you want. So basically, Swami, this was a small miracle that he showed us.
Dateless ticket. Uh-huh.
And another time, when my mother had come, a couple of things he had showed us, that she'd come for Dashara, and she was going back. And that time, Swami called her and said, Kamala Sarathi, do you have enough money with you? And my mother said, yeah, Swami, I have enough. He said, no, here, I want to give you some more money. My mother said, no, I don't need to take any more money, I have enough. So she didn't take it. So when she went to Bombay, where we used to change at Bombay to go to Delhi, suddenly she found that the train that she was booked on somehow had been cancelled. She had to buy a new first-class ticket, two first-class tickets, and she didn't have enough money.
Oh.
And so she was saying, oh, Swami told me I didn't take it, and she was very concerned. Then suddenly my uncle appeared on the platform. And he said, oh, Kamala, what are you doing here? And also she said, oh, you know, Narayan, I need some money. So he bought her the ticket. So that again was Swami's way of showing that he knew what was
coming.
I think it was the second visit when we came to Puttaparthi. And there were a lot of devotees who were leaving and they were crying. And my mother was standing at the gate and she said, there has to be something in Swami. It is not the miracles, but there's something else. His love that's drawing all these devotees. Why are they all coming? Why are they so sad to leave? It must be his love and his message. And as she was standing there thinking that, Swami came right behind her and he said, Kamala Sarathi, that thought you have is the right thought.
Wow.
He told her that. Keep
he
that
confirmed
thought.
It.
He confirmed it, that it was his love and his message that's more important than the miracles. And another time, he used to write letters to my mother quite often. And he asked her to come for Dashara. And that Dashara, it was my sister's senior Cambridge exam. So she felt, how could I leave her? She needs to coach her and things. She said, how can I leave Swami? I can't leave her and come. And so at that time, you know, she had a dream in which we two girls were swimming in a pond. And Swami's telling her, look, today your children are swimming in a pond. Tomorrow they have to swim in the ocean of life. Will you be there to protect him? Who will be there to protect him? Not you, but me. So with that dream, my mother said, okay, Swami, that was like telling her, your attachment to your children are an impediment to your spiritual life. And so at that time, she said, okay, I will make arrangements to go. But my uncle from Madras appeared. And he said, look, I'll coach them, you go.
Oh, perfect.
So again, you know, Swami facilitated for her to go to. Yeah. But this again.
And taught her the lesson of having to let go.
Exactly. So in every field, he's teaching us a lesson of having to let go.
Mm-hmm.
That is an amazing thing. Yeah. Whatever Swami asked us to do, we were quite implicit in our obedience. We didn't question. Like first time he asked us to stay, we just stayed.
Mm-hmm.
So like another time when we went, he asked us again to stay. And this time I had a piano exam in Delhi. These examiners come from England,
mm-hmm.
and they only come like once a year. And so my mother said, what do you want to do? I said, Swami's asked us to stay, we'll stay. I'll take the exam next year. And so we happily stayed. And then when on the way back, we were going in the train, and some lady there told us, oh, you know, the piano exam has been postponed. Mm-hmm. It's going to be next month.
Oh, wow.
So again, we didn't suffer ever from having listened to what Swami
said. If anything, gained.
Gained. Totally gained. Because we gained time with him and we gained very valuable life lessons. Because those days, that's how he taught us, by giving us life lessons. Mm-hmm. Telling us, you know, not exact, but by examples of mm-hmm. what we were doing, what happens then. So it was really sort of, he was truly, truly guiding us in every moment.
Mm-hmm.
As far as miracles goes, another miracle that he did show our family is when he came to Delhi in 1961, my uncle, his wife, had come to help my mother because my aunt was a very good cook. So my mother invited her to come to cook for Swami. And their little daughter was born with a congenital heart problem. So they didn't ask Swami anything. So the last day Swami said, I haven't seen her, my aunt. She said, she's been in the kitchen all the time. I have not seen her at all. Ask her to come. So my aunt said, how can I go? I've been in the kitchen. I'm sweating. I looked terrible. How can I go in front of Swami? So my mother said, no, you come. Swami's asking for you. So she and my uncle went to see Swami. And then he told them, look, you're very concerned because your daughter has, only daughter, and you, that she has this congenital heart problem. And she said, don't worry. And he took out from the air these pills and he gave it to my uncle and said, you give this to her and, you know, she will be better. And so my uncle was of a scientific mind, like my whole family was. So when he came back to Madras, he actually had one of the pills tested in the lab and found it was like the very latest medication that you could give for this problem.
Mm-hmm.
And she did take it, and she's been completely cured. She's a grown adult now, never have any problems with it. Of course, minor things also that he has done for us, you know, things like I used to suffer very badly from stomach aches, which, you know, turned out to be amoebic dysentery, but he gave me this thai tea, they called this little scroll.
Like a talisman.
Talisman,
uh-huh.
which you put in a gold and put it around your neck. So I used to wear that all the time. And also he's given different members of our family the dollar, which is a protection dollar.
Mm-hmm.
And it has protected, like my nephew had an accident and the dollar was caught in it, but he was saved.
You mean like a locket, a pendant?
Yeah.
Okay.
And we used to call it dollar. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that was saved. And Swami said that's why. And in fact, he asked my nephew when he was leaving for Delhi, he said, have I given you anything to protect you? And he said, yes, Swami, you've given me this dollar. So he knew that what was going to happen.
Mm.
So he's been extending his protection to us for such a long time that it's been just wonderful. Like even from in the beginning when we went, he knew my mother is not drawn to rituals, pujas and things. Yet he knew that she had this hunger for spirituality. So on one of our trips, he took us to Bangalore.
Mm-hmm.
And in Bangalore, he introduced us to one of his devotees called Mamita.
Mm-hmm.
She was from South America. And she had been coming to Swami for some time. But she was also an ardent devotee of the Ramakrishna Mission. And she knew Swami Ranganathananda, who was the head of the Ramakrishna Mission in Delhi. So he told Mamita, you tell Kamala Sarathy about the Ramakrishna Mission and you give her a letter of introduction to Swami Ranganathananda. So she did that. She told her about it. And my mother in Delhi went to the Ramakrishna Mission and met Swami Ranganathananda, and we all were very drawn to the Vedanta philosophy. So that was a natural. So Swami knew that she needed satsang that was suited to her, and he sent her to the Ramakrishna Mission. And this is the universality of Swami. He didn't say, you have to sit here and do puja to me. But he sent her to where she would grow spiritually. And all of us as children, we would go to the lectures, we were involved in the ashram, we did service. Before there were no Satya Sai service groups, but we did service through the Ramakrishna Mission. So he got us started that way.
So he nurtured you according to your needs.
Needs. And in fact, Swami Ranganathananda had a great respect for Swami. And one time in Madras, when they had some conference, he had come down and he'd addressed and he met Swami also. He's passed away now, but he was the head of the Ramakrishna Mission for many years.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. A wonderful person he was.
It's very nice to know that at that level there's such a deep connection. Although people tend to compartmentalize spirituality, but at the highest level all is one.
All is one.
And great masters are aware of that.
Exactly. And all through my mother's life, she was involved with the Ramakrishna Mission, and Swami, and both knew. You know, both groups knew. She went to both and nobody had any problems with it.
Mm-hmm. Since you had such access to Bhagwan and you enjoyed a loving, friendly relationship with him as your personal God and guide, what I'm curious to know is, did you seek his advice in matters related to personal decision-making?
We did. Mm-hmm. We did. And when we did not, he gave it to us also. So both ways, he guided us. When I was getting ready to go to college, I was thinking I would probably go to be a doctor. And Swami called me and he asked me, you know, what are you going to do? And I said, Swami, I don't know, maybe I was thinking of being a doctor. Then he said, no, go into nursing.
Hmm.
And so I said very happily, okay, I'll go into nursing.
That was fine, right away.
I didn't think anything of it. You know, Swami has said it, so I'm doing it. So I came back to Delhi and it turns out that just 2 years before that, the University of Delhi had opened a BSc program for nursing. And so I said, I'll apply. And the college was like around the corner from our house. So I said, I'm going to apply there. So I told my dad. And my dad, at that time, my dad was not such a believer, you know, and Swami. So my dad said, how can you go nursing? Girls from good families didn't go into nursing then. He said, how can you go into nursing? You should go and be a doctor. And if you go into nursing, I shall disinherit you. So I used to laugh at him and I said, look, I have nothing to inherit really, because we really didn't have any wealth or anything. I said, so it doesn't really matter. So I'm going to do what Swami said. And so I went into nursing, and I have to tell you that after that, my father was my biggest supporter in my profession, in nursing and education.
How did that change of heart take place?
He just, you know, he saw what was happening and maybe, you know, through Swami. And also he was a very generous man in spirit and like, so he realized, you know, that there is a profession that was good for me. So he was very happy with that. Then, and other matters also that he kept guiding us, when my sister was getting married, she was engaged to a boy who comes from a very traditional South Indian family. And so my mother had to go down and make all the negotiations for the wedding, you know, which is a big thing. You know, they want different things and all of that. And she really didn't know what to do. So we came to Swami, of course, before that. So Swami sat her down and he said, I'm going to give you some advice. And so he said, first of all, your husband, he's taken his money out of the pension fund. He's given you, those days, I think it was 10,000 rupees. Which was a lot.
A lot of money then, yeah.
But he said, you must not spend one penny over the 10,000.
Mm-hmm.
You must make sure that all the expenses are within that money.
Mm-hmm.
And the next thing he said is, you go and do negotiations with the future mother-in-law. And you may have arguments. You may have to decide. But he said, at the end of the day, never leave with bad feelings. Always make up and leave with good feelings. And start the negotiations again the next day. And the last thing he said was, as soon as the wedding is finished, leave Leela with that family and you all come to Puttaparthi. So my mother did follow. And when you look at it, these instructions are good for life.
Mm-hmm.
That people should not exceed their income. You know, when you're living, you don't exceed your income. You live within the income. Same thing when you're dealing with people, you do negotiations, sometimes you do hard negotiations, but you never leave with hard feelings. You always make up and leave. So these are little life situations. And he knew that if we hung around, Leela would have a hard time settling in with the family because they were so different from us. So he said, just drop her like a hot potato and you just all come. So we all came away to Puttaparthi leaving her. So these, and my mother did exactly what he did.
Even if it was a hard choice.
It was very hard negotiating, you know, because they wanted this, they wanted silver vessels, for instance, you know, which nobody ever uses. Mm-hmm. And my mother knew that she couldn't afford to do the silver vessels. But then one of the sisters of the in-law was a very good friend of my mother through the Ramakrishna Mission.
Mm-hmm.
So she came and said, oh, you know, you only want the silver vessels so that people will see it. She said, I'll bring all my silver vessels and put it on the table for people to see. So, you know, she got a lot of help from different places. Mm-hmm. Rani Ma, whom we know, helped her with all the negotiation, and her family helped with doing the catering. Not those days it was not catering. We had to buy everything and do it. So all of Swami helped her do this wedding. Because my father was still in Delhi. And the only thing he told her was, he said, I don't care what you do with the money, but the food has to be excellent.
Mm-hmm.
So Swami followed, gave her instructions exactly to follow, which he did to the T, and we came back. So all little things Swami always gave us. And every time when we had problems in Delhi or anything, those days Kasturi Mama was with Swami and we were very close to him. So we would write to Kasturi Mama, a telegram, send a telegram. And my nephew had to have a major abdominal operation as a baby, 3 months old. Wrote to Swami and Swami sent back, so no, he'll be all right. And he told my mother to go and be with the baby. So he directed us in every little thing even. I mean, I can't even remember all the things that he did say for us to do, but he did keep directing us. In fact, after I finished my nursing, I was teaching, he had opened the first general hospital here.
Mm-hmm.
And for the opening, he said, he asked me to come and set up the whole outpatient unit and set up the whole place. So I came and I spent a few days and organized it. And he had the governor of Andhra Pradesh also come. And then he asked me, can you stay a few days? And I told Swami, I have to go back. I've just taken leave for this many days. He was so gracious. He sent me in his car with an escort to the airport so that I could get back in time.
Time to your duty.
Yeah, very wonderful. Just wonderful, Swami. Yeah.
As I'm listening to you, I'm trying to visualize. For most of us, it just sounds like a fairy tale, actually, that he was so involved. Don't spend over 10,000 rupees.
Yes.
Live
yes.
within your means.
Yes.
Negotiate hard, but in good spirit.
Yes, absolutely.
And let go.
And let go, yeah. That's right.
So many lessons.
Yeah,
there.
All the attachments. My mother was very fond of music, and Swami encouraged it very much, so that she made sure that she learned all the bhajans and that she would do it well. So she, in Delhi, we used to sing our bhajans and things like that. Then when my father moved to Madras, Sundaram was built. That is Swami's residence in Madras. And the first time when Swami came to Sundaram, they had a group that was singing bhajans. And so after the bhajan, Swami was walking down the aisle. My mother was sitting on one side. So he comes to my mother and he says in Telugu, Kamala Sarathi, the bhajan was very bad.
Oh dear.
That is all he said. Kamala Sarathi, bhajan, very bad. And he walked off. So my mother says, oh my goodness, this means something. The Swami wants me to do something about it. So she took it upon herself to start a whole method of organizing who would be singing, getting, you know, the people, the singers, setting out how to lay out the bhajans, who would be leaders, how would you sing, and also, setting up the process so that it would continue. So she and they had like 3 members of panels who would interview people before that as to who would sing before you just let them sing. And then they went on. And so now they are one of the best bhajan groups because my mother was a perfectionist.
Mm-hmm.
She played the violin for them, but she had them singing. And also when you're a classical musician, you can hear the differences in music. And, you know, if you're not quite up to the mark, you know. So she was able to get them all up. And they've done a lot of recordings and wonderful. So Swami also triggered her love of music into that field.
And now Sundaram Bhajans are known for their high quality all over the world.
Exactly.
And people use Sundaram Bhajans to learn new bhajans from.
Yes.
Oh, so your mother was the pioneer in auditioning people for that.
Yes. She also composed a few bhajans at that time too.
Mrs. Bose, I understand the summer of 1961 was a very special one for your family. Instead of all of you making your annual summer trip to Puttaparthi, the Lord of Puttaparthi came to your home in New Delhi. What was it like to have God incarnate come over for a sleepover?
An interesting question. First of all, we were in a panic, of course, with Swami coming to our house, how we wanted to give the best arrangements for him. So we went into a whole mode of getting arrangements, and my mother, I think, drew on all the favors from everybody. So we had to get our house in order for him. My father moved out of his bedroom suite so that Swami could have it. And Swami was coming with, like, I think 40 devotees approximately. So we had to make accommodations for them too. So we had arranged, there used to be a Madrasi school which was on vacation at that time. So we arranged for them to have accommodation. We arranged for them to have food, well catered. And so it was like having Swami there was so wonderful because he was there, he was sitting in our living room, and people would come because they knew he was only there for like a couple of days, not long. And people would come and see him, and it is just like unbelievable, totally unbelievable to have Swami.
How could you sleep at night?
Right? I know, we never slept because we were only thinking of what to do the next day. Yeah. Are we giving Swami the right food? Are we doing this? You know, we were so concerned with the physical things of what Swami was doing, you know, to take care of him. And also take care of his devotees because Swami did mention he was very happy with our arrangements for his devotees. Because always, that's another lesson. If we take care of his devotees, he's happy. And so that was a wonderful trip. Then he took my mother with him to Vrindavan. He took Sarjuma and my mother. Not Vrindavan, Badrinath.
Badrinath. Oh, they were part of that
trip. They were part of that
trip, which was led by the then governor of Uttar Pradesh.
Correct.
Sri Ramakrishna Rao.
Yes. And there he told my mother that I have done the last ceremonies for you.
Oh.
Because you have no sons, only two daughters, so I've done the last ceremonies for you. He did it in Badrinath for my mother.
How blessed was she?
She was really blessed. He was extremely fond of her. He was very, very fond of her. And she too, of him. Yeah. Hmm.
And that's really something,
yes.
Huh?
Yes, that's totally amazing. Of course, before then he had come in 57, and he stayed at my uncle's house, Sarjuma's house. And that was also wonderful because, you know, we could go over every day. And then my uncle drove him by car to Vrindavan and then to Rishikesh because Swami Shivananda had invited Swami to come. So he drove him and he came, you know, all the way. And it was so blessed to be able to drive Swami,
which was
also wonderful because, you know, within a year my uncle passed away. He had a heart problem. So this last trip with Swami was like a true blessing.
And to a sacred place like Rishikesh.
Yes, go to a sacred place with Swami. It was a total blessing that he had. That was wonderful. Swami has given to us in so many ways to our family that, you know, the only way we can replace it is to follow his teachings. That's the way.
Very true. I understand a slice of Prashanthi Nilayam is tucked away in the bustling city of Chennai, and you're blessed to call it home. Mrs. Bose, tell us about this house that you live in and its amazing history. The house in Chennai.
Yes. When my father was ready to retire, Swami told him, you live either in Bangalore or in Madras. He said, you choose. You can live either, you know, two places. My father chose Madras because we all come from Madras. So you've got this plot of land, and we told Swami that we have this land and we're going to build a house. So Swami said, I'll come to lay the foundation. He happened to be in Madras. He said, I'll come. So he came, laid the foundation stone. And then later he'd come to Madras quite frequently those times. And then he'd come to Madras, and one time the house was being constructed. He said, I want to go and see the house. So my father said, look, it's all, Swami, it's all mud and slushy. You know, your company will get dirty, your feet, please, not now. He said, no, I want to come and see. So he came, they put planks, and Swami came and he saw the construction. And then when finally the house was built, we had a Graha Pravesham, and Swami came for that.
Housewarming as well.
Housewarming, yes, he came for that.
Do you remember the year when this house was constructed?
Yes, it was finished in 1965. Mm-hmm. And because my son was born in 65 and we all came from the States, two babies for the Graha Pravesham. Mm-hmm. And 65 it was completed. And after that he had come and, I was not there, but he's come and visited the house of my parents were there.
My God, so four visits.
Oh, yes.
From laying the foundation to supervising the construction, yes, to the housewarming and later,
yes,
again.
And many people who come to the house say there's a special aura in the house because of Swami's
divine tread.
And in fact, when, in the housewarming time, when Swami was getting into the car after that, my father ran after him with this mala Swami had forgotten. And my father was a heart patient. So Swami got down from his car and he told my father, Sarathi, you should not run because you have a heart problem. He stopped and he massaged his heart and said, you'll be fine. And then he got back into
his car. The best jog your dad ever had.
Ever. That was so wonderful. Yeah. And the house Swami, when my mother was very ill, that's another story I'll have to tell you.
Please.
When she had cancer, and anyway, she was very ill, Swami told her, there are two daughters, but he told her to leave the house to me. And my mother said, how can I do that? I have two daughters and it's not, she felt badly. She said, how can I do that? So every time when she'd come to Puttaparthi after that, he'd ask her, have you done that? Have you done that? We don't know why, but he was very insistent. And my sister didn't mind. She has a house that her husband's family has. And anyway, we didn't have any problems. So my mother, finally, she gifted the house to me, and 3 months later, she passed away on November 24th,
wow,
1999.
Just a day after the birthday.
In fact, when we came to see Swami after that, he said, your mother would not have liked to have gone on my birthday, so I took her a day after that, he said. In fact, when she was last 3 years, when she was very sick with cancer, she had cancer of the tongue. First time we'd gone to him and we said, they're recommending radiation. And what do you suggest? And so Swami said, yes, let her take radiation. So she took the radiation. And then for a year, the radiation affected her. She lost her hearing and all that. And then for a year, she was fine. Then it came back again. And then they wanted to do something called brachytherapy, which is quite aggressive. So my mother said, at that time she couldn't move out. So she asked me to go and talk to Swami. So he was in Whitefield. So I came to Whitefield and I asked Swami, they're saying this, what do you think we should do? So he stopped for a little while, he looked in the distance, then he said, do nothing. Mm-hmm. I will take care of her. He said.
I see.
And that's exactly what happened. He took care of her. Last, because in that, with the cancer of the tongue, many times you have intense pain, mm-hmm, you have bleeding. She had nothing of that. She never had to have morphine, nothing. She passed away very peacefully at home with Swami's.
And His grace acted as the morphine.
Absolutely.
Cutting
absolutely.
The pain out.
Cut the pain out. So that He took all that away from her. And then the last 2 days she was only in Swami's, thinking of Swami. We had bhajans going all the time. And she was only thinking of Swami as she passed away. Because, that's what we want in the last days. We don't want to have attachments. Children and all, only Swami, that's what she said. So that's what we did, and she passed away in Swami's presence. So He took care of her from the time she came to the time she died.
Hearing of your mom's illness and the fact that she died of cancer, now this is a person who spent most part of her life serving Swami or singing the glories of God, and then it was her tongue that was struck with the terminal disease. Did you ever question why it happened to her? Did it bother her? Why was life so harsh or unfair in any way?
No, it never bothered her. She said she never questioned as to why she got it. Mm-hmm. But the fact that she got it, she took it as a karmic, as an ending. And in many ways, as she said, is that Swami gives us these things at the end. Basically, to take away some karma, you'll suffer physical illness So she never had any thought or why me, nothing like that.
No self-pity, no anger.
No, none at all, whatsoever.
Just acceptance.
Just acceptance. That is what you said is true. Throughout her life, she accepted what came her way because of Swami. Because Swami was there. You know, when you think of it, our whole life, we always felt Swami was with us. Like even in America with my children, I used to say, you know, Swami's always with us. And so they had no fear. Sometimes at night my daughter would be scared. I said, why are you scared? Swami's with us. And just the fact that he's always, and they had come, some children, they knew Swami, that knowing that Swami was there, nothing, I mean, bad things, not bad things, adverse things happen to us in life because we have our karmas we have to go through. But how we deal with them is what Swami taught us. That you have to deal through those karmas in proper ways and not resent, not angry, and not accumulate further karma in dealing with those.
And resisting them.
And resisting them. Because by resistance, we are accumulating further karma. By talking against Swami, if you say, why am I giving it? Why did God give me this? The self-pity is accumulating further karma. But acceptance is a very important thing. Because once you accept, from that comes forgiveness and other things. So acceptance is very key that he taught us.
And that constant awareness that Swami is always with you, as you told your children, that fearlessness that comes from that conviction is such a huge life skill.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, with all of us, that is true. And at every turn of life, whatever was happening, even, you know, like when I took on the family business, Swami blessed it and he said, you do it. And every time, like when my mother was sick, I wanted to leave and come. He said, no, you continue yours. Your mother will be fine. So, you know, this might seem like advice that somebody might give different advice to somebody. That's the other thing that I feel very strongly about that I need to say is sometimes that when he gives advice personally, it is meant for that person.
So it's specific to that case.
Correct. Because Swami he gears is whatever advice he gives to that person because it's specific.
To their situation.
To their situation. So for us to take that or somebody else to take the advice that he's given me and try to put that in, unless it's a general global thing, you know, that's different. But very specific advice is, like he told me not to come back and to continue working. For somebody else, it may be something else.
He might say, give up your job and serve your mom.
And take care of your mom. Right.
That's right.
So that's what we have to be very careful in our dealings. But of course, nowadays we follow his teachings because we don't have that much access to Swami.
I know. And I found that strange because you said Swami's visit to your house was short, only 2 days. I'm like thinking most people hope they have a 2-second eye contact with Bhagwan these days. And you had got to yourselves for 48 hours and you felt it was short. I guess it's all relative.
And he did tell us those days. He told us that one day you will see me as a distant speck in orange. You won't see me this close. We didn't believe him, of course. We thought, no. How can that ever be? Swami will always be close. Sure, he's a distant speck in orange or gold when you see him in the birthday celebrations. Yes. That's what you see. But we do have our wonderful memories of all the trips we took. Like he even took us to Kodaikanal one trip. And this was in the early days. And we rented a house. And he would take my mother, Sarjuma, and I don't remember if Ranima was there. Maybe she was there too. He would have them come at night and sleep over in the house. So that early morning at 4 o'clock, he got up and he taught them Omkaram. He taught them the correct way to do Omkaram.
How to chant the Om.
How to chant the Om correctly. And then we would go with the children in the morning and then he would spend all the time with us. With the children again, he would play with the children. He'd spend time giving advice, all the questions we have to ask, he would be sitting there all morning talking to us.
I realize you were very young then, but I just have to ask you this. These women, such as your mother and Rani Ma, they were so deeply spiritual and committed to Bhagwan, and yet their husbands were not as much or were latecomers into the movement. It was the women who led the spiritualization of family life in your cases. Did Bhagwan give any advice on how to handle husbands who don't share your enthusiasm for Swami to the extent or the conviction they had that whatever Bhagwan said was the law? They were never going to question it. Whereas the rational mind has, the monkey mind, you know, you analyze things and lead, which often leads to analysis paralysis, but you always want to question stuff. How did that sit with these women? These are traditional women raised with Indian values. So how did they handle that?
Well, Swami did give them advice mm-hmm. on how they should not antagonize their husbands.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, you need to get their permission if you want to come. You know, that basically you cannot antagonize and say, I must do this, or Swami said this, or like throw Swami in their face.
Mm-hmm.
But he said, slowly, by your way of life, they will change.
By your example. Said,
your example.
But have them on side.
Yeah. Have them, but keep them, and then they will change by seeing what's happened to you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly what happened. My father, Swami, even when my father was not a believer, he always had very good things. He said he's a very generous, good-hearted man. You know, and my father was not anti-Swami. He just was not a believer in all these things. But once he got to know Swami, then he was a believer.
Mm-hmm.
But he never came to Puttaparthi, but he saw Swami in Madras.
So the best way to influence your spouse is through personal transformation and example.
Absolutely. That's the only way. That's what Swami would tell them, you know, give them advice. And he'd even give them detailed advice of family life, you know, quarrels, how to deal with your husband and all of that he has given them. So that, you know, family life should be maintained, children and all of that. And by your example, Swami, your husbands will eventually come around.
And despite such intense devotion, he never allowed them to step outside of the family life. Maintain that.
No, never.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. Maintain it. And those days, that's what people did anyway.
Yes.
You know. Nowadays, it's different. People are ready to drop family life at the drop of a hat, mm-hmm. but not them.
Mm-hmm.
And they did bring their husbands. It's a matter of effecting change
mm-hmm.
in the other person. And both Ranima and my mother, their husbands did come around in the end.
And Baba says that if you look at the number of devotees here, for many of them, it was women who were instrumental in bringing them, whether it was their mother or their wife or a sister.
Yes. In my family, the women are the forerunners. That is the truth. This goes back towards my grandmother, my great-grandmother, not my grandmother. You know, they were all women of great strength and spirituality who were very important for their family lives, you know. So the women always have taken, and that is why sort of we were brought up with the feeling that we can do anything,
mm-hmm.
you know.
The self-confidence.
The self-confidence Swami is given.
And he said that's the first step to spiritual growth, self-confidence.
So Swami gave us that.
I think the one thing that's lacking in the West with all his progress is young women not having enough self-esteem.
Yes.
And that, I think, stems from the fact that lack of spirituality.
You need the spiritual base in which to grow.
Yeah.
And then you have the self-esteem.
Very true. Now, having known Bhagwan for, 62 and a half years at the time of recording this interview, how would you describe his greatest impact on you as a person?
It's difficult to say that.
Why?
Because it's almost, having known him since I was 12 and I'm now 75, it's almost as though he has molded my life. You know, I can't say he's had one single impact, but my whole life has been molded by him, and it's been sort of devoted to him. Even though I'm in the world doing the worldly things, in the back is always Swami,
mm-hmm.
you know. And so basically, he's been like a member of our family. It's like a family member, and it's such a close relationship that you feel like you're encompassed with a security blanket
mm-hmm.
of his love. Main thing is his love. That's what comes. He's told us so many times, you know, you and I have a personal connection, he said. From my heart to your heart, we have personal connection. That is why sort of I've always maintained the personal connection, and I've never been involved with any societies or anything, any groups. Maybe they never came my way, or maybe that was not my destiny, whatever it was. But it's been more of a personal, for us it's been a very personal commitment to Swami. And he is like the guiding light for us. I don't know what we would have done without him, you know, mm-hmm. when you think of it. And he's now, When you look, he's been taking care of us for four generations. From my mother, from my sister and I, our children, and now the grandchildren. And he's been taking care of them, you know, advice. And he brought the grandchildren to his school so that they may be formed proper, you know, the correct way. And is also guiding us thoroughly, brought any member. And so it's wonderful that all the members of our family are all Swami devotees. And have the same love and regard.
Across four generations, which is very huge.
Yes, it is very huge. And for that, we are highly grateful to Swami, you know, for that.
You talk so warmly of him being a family member. Are there times when you find yourself not obeying what Swami has done? And how do you react? Does it ever happen, first of all? And if so, do you feel scared? Or
One thing I have to say is that, I mean, I personally have never been scared of Swami.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I know my mother, sometimes she would say, if she did something or she thought some...
If you disobeyed, did you feel scared of him?
Yeah, so I know my mother sometimes, you know, she'd say, I've done something that, I forget now, on this trip to Badrinath, something happened and she said, or she talked ill of some of the devotees or something. Somebody talked ill and she just agreed with them or something. Then she said after that, oh my gosh, Swami will scold me, you know. And then Swami kept asking for her, you know, that day. She wants to come. She didn't go to see him because she was scared.
To face him.
To face him. And then when she finally went, Swami only said, Kamala Sarthi, you go back because we have to make arrangements for the return trip. But no, we were not scared of him like that. We never see him as a wrathful God.
He's a loving God.
He's absolutely a loving God. And somebody that you can put anything in front of and he will forgive you. And the one time when you say things that you disobeyed, I mean, the one time I did disobey him, I have regretted it all my life. When we were little, I never used to sing, open my mouth and sing because my sister was such a good singer. And again, it's an ego problem. You know, she was so good and I didn't want to sing. I used to play the violin. So when we used to sing bhajan, Swami used to say, Prema, sing. Open your mouth and sing. So many times he told me, I never did it.
Mm.
I regret today because for my own sake, I could have sung bhajans. So, you know, this when Swami tells you these little things, they seem little, but they have far-reaching consequences. And I think it's very important for us to do it and not try to analyze.
Yeah.
To always do an analysis of what it is. Because do we know more than Swami?
Absolutely not.
Even some people say, oh, in the early days, they say, oh, this devotee wants to interview Swami. Why can't you give them? Swami said, do you know? I know better than you who deserves.
Because he's watching us all from above.
Exactly.
And he has a bird's eye view of everything. He knows the past, the present,
exactly.
The future.
Exactly. If we start judging, are we as great as him? No. Yeah. We have to accept that Swami is there.
And he knows better.
He knows the best that there is.
What is your most precious takeaway from the Sai experience, your most valuable lesson?
Growing up with Swami, being so close to him, the one thing that for myself I felt is that the best way you can do service to him is to follow his teachings. And his teachings are many. And now all of us cannot follow all of them.
Mm-hmm.
So I chose to pick a couple of teachings and live them fully. Swami did tell me that you should always have a big heart.
Mm-hmm.
That is what he said, big heart. You know what he used to say. So I feel you have to open your heart to people. So the lessons that I've learned, one thing is he said, love, you know, hurt never. So try to help as much as I can for people and not hurt. And the other thing is just open your heart with love. You know, Swami gives us love. So we have to replace Swami. So to me, the message is love.
Mm-hmm. Share it with as many people.
Yeah. And do as much good as you can. And sometimes you don't have to do good on a global scale. Sometimes people around you need it. When I was running my company, all my employees were my family, treated them like that. Same thing now in my Chennai house. They're all my family. We take care of them. And so, you know, all of them have become Swami devotees. Not because I'm saying I have a picture and I'm worshipping, but somehow they've all become Swami devotees. In fact, whenever I come to Puttaparthi, their desire is bring me a photo of Swami, bring me Vibhuti. That's all they want. So it's just... So basically, it's a very personal thing. I don't believe in big global schemes, but what Swami has taught us, I just wanted to put it into practice and leave that legacy of Swami behind. The other thing with Swami that we, as you know, coming to Him so early and through the years that we have learnt, is to have unquestioning faith in Swami and not waver through all the 62 years. We have not wavered in our faith in Swami. And I think that is a very important aspect that for people to understand, that you have this totalitarian faith in Him and He takes care of you. But He takes care of you even if you don't have the faith. That's mm-hmm. what we have to remember. He's not taking care of me because I'm doing something for Him and because I have it. But the total faith that we have, that Swami is the end all and be all. I think that when we have that, then you don't want to do something to displease Him. You don't want to go against His wishes. But knowing that and doing something that you know Swami doesn't want you to do, I think that must have repercussions. I mean, I see young people nowadays who come to Swami's feet and Swami is giving them lessons. He's telling the young people and the older people, we all have to take the message that, you know, don't spend so much time in front of television. Don't spend so much time on the phone.
Cell phones, for example.
And they all sit at His feet and they all say nod, but they go back and they do that. And can you, in full faith of Swami, do that? I mean, each one of us should take, I feel, we should take one lesson and try to follow that. And you'll find the results at the end. Because sometimes it's too difficult for young people particularly, or even us olders, to take all His lessons and try to be the perfect person. We're not. You know, I get angry. You know, you get angry, you yell at somebody. All this happens. But try and take one or two of Swami's teachings and put it into practice. Mm-hmm. And every day, I think, every morning after the prayer, one of the things that we say is, Swami, think through me, speak through me, and work through me. You know, these are things. And then hopefully leave the rest to Him.
It's been very insightful listening to you, Mrs. Bose. Thank you for sharing your time and coming over to our studio. I'm sure our listeners will enjoy this interview very, very much.
Thank you for having me. Sai Ram.
Sai Ram.
Sai Ram, dear listener, you just heard a conversation with Mrs. Prema Bose, and in conversation with her was Sister Karuna Munshi. Dear listener, you could email us your feedback as always to listener@radiosci.org. You can also WhatsApp us to this number 9393258258. With this, we come to the end of this morning's segment, Divine Glory on Thursday Live from Prashantinilayam. And it's me, Team Radio Sai Sunil, signing off, offering this segment at the Divine Lotus Feet of our dear Lord Sai. At 11:30, Bishu will join you with his segment, Outside, Inside, Deep Inside. Thank you for staying tuned, and Jai Sai Ram.
सद्गुरु ब्रह्म सनातन हे सद्गुरु ब्रह्म सनातन हे दयाघन पावन हे परम दयाघन पावन हे मज दुख विनाशन हे जन्म ज दुख विनाशन हे
सनातन है।